Today on Doomed! 12 people on the stage tonight. 12 people one night for a Democratic debate. Just too much. But, I mean, it's hard for me to sit here and pretend we're just going to talk about this debate tonight on the post-debate show when this bombshell news just dropped right after the debate. So let's just get right to it. Let's bring this music down, because we've got a lot to talk about. No fancy intro, no witty comments from me. We are getting right to it, folks. Let me just pull up here. Oh, I got two feeds going on. That was weird. All right, here we go. Joining me for this episode of Doomed right now is David Dole of the Rational National. David Dole, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Hey, what's going on? It's great to be here, Matt.
Oh, thanks for joining me at this late hour, Dave. We're like minutes away from tomorrow, at least on the East Coast.
This is the latest I've probably shot anything, but it's post debate. It's fresh, and the news you just mentioned of the big endorsements is also fresh. So let's get to it.
Yeah. So I'm so excited. I don't even know what to say. Like, this is crazy. This is huge. This change. Even if you're not a Bernie Sanders supporter, you have to realize, you know, if you're following this election, this is a huge game changer, I think, because you have three of the most visible members of the Democratic Party, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, and Rashid Tlaib, basically news breaking right after tonight's 12-person debate. 12 people, my God, too much. 12-person debate that they're going to be endorsing Bernie Sanders.
That's right. It's pretty nuts. I always hoped this would happen. I mean, if you look at each of these three politicians, their positions, how they've been working with Bernie on various bills, it seems natural that this endorsement would happen. But I guess the timing of it is just perfect. I mean, we're at a time now when Elizabeth Warren is sort of gaining in the polls. Biden's dropping, and Bernie needed something to kind of lift him up. And you know, this debate wasn't really going to deliver it. I mean, we'll get to it, but I thought Bernie did a great job. But like usual, he's rarely ever called on during these debates, so it's hard for him to really get those moments in when he's barely even actually has screen time. So a piece of news like this, I think, is exactly what his campaign needs, and I imagine it will affect his support, and it will give him a bump. I mean, this is definitely news, and it's going to be on media. I mean, oftentimes, you know, CNN, MSNBC, they just get away with ignoring Bernie Sanders, but this is a piece of news they can't ignore. And on top of that, you're going to have these three politicians, AOC, Tlaib, Omar, they're going to be on television as surrogates for Bernie Sanders. And that is huge. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a big boost for him.
See, I don't think a lot of people realize that there was a chance they weren't going to endorse Bernie. I mean, I honestly wasn't sure, and I don't think that says really anything about their progressive bona fides. I think it says something about how we just know these things work nowadays. I mean, everyone assumed Elizabeth Warren was going to endorse Bernie Sanders in 2016, or at least that was the hope. And when she didn't, a lot of people were disappointed. She didn't endorse anybody until after the primaries. But still, I think people were like, you know, you guys claim to be on the same, you know, the same progressive left wing side of the Democratic Party. So you think you'd back each other up. And that didn't happen in 2016. And I think some people thought, you know, as much as we like AOC and Ilhan Omar and Rashid Tlaib, I think that everyone thought there's a chance that, you know, if Elizabeth Warren was doing it for you know, political goodwill in the future, they might do the same. And
yeah,
I don't think they were planning on not endorsing Bernie now that we know they were going to, but I do really think that the timing has to do, my cat is jumping on me, I'm sorry. I think the timing has to do with, honestly, Bernie Sanders' heart attack. I think, and I think we've seen this with just supporters of Bernie, the campaign itself, Sanders tonight during the debate. I think it re-energized the campaign. I think you saw a campaign that was struggling to set itself apart from a rising Elizabeth Warren campaign, and Joe Biden, really, you know, he's dropping, but it's a real slow descent. It's not like, whoa, he's falling quick. It's, you know,
yeah,
that's it for Biden.
It's a slow descent. Yeah.
And I think they were sort of frustrated and like, you know, what's going on? And then Bernie had this health scare, and I think people really thought, you know, this is our one opportunity. If you're a leftist, if you're someone further left than Elizabeth Warren, if you don't consider yourself to be a capitalist, then you need to come to terms with the fact that there is no matter, and Sanders ain't perfect. He's the compromise to begin with, but Sanders is the one national U.S. politician anywhere whatsoever on the left spectrum. I mean,
yeah.
And once he's gone, unless Omar, AOC, and Tlaib quickly, you know, get to the national stage level that, you know, they are on their way media wise, but in terms of just like a background in Congress, you know, they're young. And, you know, it's going to take years for them to get to that point. But who knows? Maybe they'll, you know, but still.
Yeah. Well, I think that this endorsement, this allows them to then sort of be the new Bernie Sanders once Bernie Sanders is eventually retired after he's president for 8 years, obviously. But like this gives them the opportunity to say, hey, we were there. I mean, he was there with us, we were there with him, and they can actually, Bernie can eventually pass the torch to these three incredible congresspeople and really have them lead the political revolution or this progressive, whatever you call it, going forward, because they are there standing with him now. And you mentioned Elizabeth Warren. I guess that the slight difference with the situation with Warren is that she had the Clinton machine in front of her. So it was the Clinton machine versus Bernie Sanders. And because of the way the media covered that race, the mass media covered that race, it always seemed like to them that, well, Hillary's going to eventually win this anyways. So I think Warren's strategy, even though I don't agree with it, I think her strategy was, hey, if I wait this out and then endorse Hillary, at least Hillary will have a progressive voice in her ear. Whereas if Warren endorsed Bernie sooner, and in Warren's mind, Bernie's not going to win anyways. Well, she kind of wasted her endorsement, and now she doesn't have any say over Hillary Clinton. Whereas, so she kind of calculated that and thought, well, Hillary's going to win, so I'll wait, and then I'll get to be the progressive voice in Hillary's ear and hopefully push her in the right direction on some issues. That obviously didn't happen. Hillary lost, so it was a mistake for her to wait and not do that. And I think, honestly, if Warren had endorsed Bernie early in that campaign, I think there's a really good chance he would have beat Clinton, because he came so close, and he maybe just needed that little nudge from another politician who had who was well known to push people towards Bernie and made it okay for, say, female supporters to support Bernie Sanders as opposed to Hillary Clinton, when Hillary Clinton's running on this idea of, you know, I'm with her. So now with these three with the squad, what you really have is the left side in Washington, the left base, really coalescing around Bernie Sanders and making it clear he is the candidate. Elizabeth Warren is, you know, a backup if Bernie doesn't make it. But it has to be clear that I think there is a big difference between Bernie and Warren. I think Bernie has shown fight. He has shown, like in 2016, he has shown that he's actually willing to challenge power. Bernie Sanders, from reporting, apparently waited to see if Warren would go after or would challenge Clinton in 2016. She didn't. Bernie had the guts to do it, and Bernie has had the guts again and again, whether it's against Amazon, against Walmart, against the healthcare industry. He has shown that he is willing to actually challenge power. I haven't really seen that from Elizabeth Warren. She has some nice proposals. She says some nice things, but I feel like when she feels the pressure, if she becomes, say, president, I think if she feels the pressure, I think she'll cave in and she won't be with the people. She won't stand with the people. She won't really engage the movement the way that Bernie Sanders' presidency would. And I think that's the real difference. And AOC, Tlaib, and Omar recognize that.
Right. You know, Elizabeth Warren's no Hillary Clinton. Let's get that, you know.
No,
you,
no.
You know, you didn't say that. I just want people to, you know, because when I feel like when, you know, people who tend to support Bernie talk about Warren and criticize her, people assume that, oh, those few Twitter weirdos with a few dozen followers who who call Elizabeth Warren Hillary 2.0 or whatever, that's the feeling of every Sanders supporter. And no, by far, that they're the ones in the minority. If Bernie Sanders didn't exist, Elizabeth Warren would be the most progressive in the race, running a traditional progressive presidential campaign. That, I mean, you see it in her play from 2016. She was working from this, I'm going to run a traditional, you know, sort of mindset, traditional strategy. Look at my future campaign run. Look at a future that involves Clinton as the president, and then I would run when Clinton was through. And she calculated that supporting Bernie wouldn't help her. And that's fine. I totally get it. But she couldn't have seen what ended up happening, where Bernie Sanders ended up starting a long-term movement that has stuck by him since 2016, before that even, when he announced in 2015. I mean, I think you see it pretty much in the polls where Elizabeth Warren's base is coming from. And it's really not coming from the Bernie Sanders base. Bernie Sanders has lost very little to Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren has basically consumed the Hillary Clinton 2016 base. She shares that with Kamala, Kamala, and she's probably taken a little bit from everybody else.
Joe Biden as well. She's taken from his support as well. So yeah, it's mostly Joe Biden supporters and Kamala Harris supporters. It appears from looking at the data, that's where Warren's pulling most of her support from, which also makes me think, maybe we can get into the debate now, that Warren's support isn't all that solid. I mean, you have this debate kind of surprised me, because I guess I didn't really think about it, but most of the candidates on stage went after Warren. I mean, they were not going after Biden. They were going after Warren. And it kind of caught me off guard at first when I think Kamala Harris maybe started it, but then Pete Buttigieg came in. Like, everybody was going, it's like, oh, this is the play now, because they see Biden dropping. They know, I mean, everybody on that stage knows Bernie's support is solid, so there's no real use going after him. So Warren is the play. If Warren's taken from Kamala, Warren's taken from Biden, it means her support was never really guaranteed to her from the start, which means her supporters aren't really solid, which means you can potentially peel off some of those supporters for their own campaigns. So that's what they all tried to do, to varying degrees. I mean, some better than others.
Right.
So I'm curious to see what the effect will be. But yeah, it was interesting to see that play that I guess I didn't expect, but it totally makes sense now that it happened.
Right. In every other debate we've had so far, every single one, I thought, you know, Warren came out of this great, even if she wasn't, you know, I don't think anyone could put her below like a number two position if she wasn't coming out the debates the winner. She handled herself really great, had really good answers. She was smart. She's always smart. But, you know, she sounded like she had an answer for every question, had a comeback for every retort from another candidate. But tonight, I don't think she handled being the front runner well. And she wasn't bad. It's just that she wasn't good. She wasn't on her A game. She wasn't as, you know, witty with her responses. She sort of dropped the... When Biden did that weird thing where he tried to take credit for her Consumer Bureau, that he looked terrible. This is what I say. She wasn't bad here. I mean, he clearly lost that. She came out the winner in that. But at the same time, it was a failed moment for for her to knock him.
Yes, absolutely.
For his connection to so many issues with the banks, and she didn't go for it. And again, he looked bad. She came out of that the winner, But if she was on her A game, she would have also taken that win from Biden looking bad and then hit the, you know, the 1-2 punch to knock Biden out. And I think she would have came out looking really good. Instead, Biden just came out looking bad.
Yeah, for Warren, it was, I guess her issue was more, it wasn't content of what she was saying as much as it was performance and her inability to really have those moments. I mean, she had a moment there where she was just letting Biden essentially take credit for what she did and act like that. I'm sure he must have been one of the people in Obama's administration pushing back against a lot of the progressive policies that he was trying to push forward. I mean, there's reporting on, I believe, on Obamacare that says that essentially Biden was not in favor of it, was scared of how far it may go, or the public option, for example. And to not take that moment and just, whether it's, I mean, just lay out Biden's votes. I mean, again, just stomp down on what Bernie had just said about the Iraq war, about bailing out the banks. Like, she could have done something, and she kind of just let him talk and I guess kind of hoped that he would just, you know, tire himself out and just stop talking or something, or people would forget about the moment. But it was an opportunity that she didn't grab. And right. It makes you wonder, I mean, if she's on a debate stage against Trump, would she be able to get those moments? And it's like, it sounds weird and funny to even talk about it, because ultimately what matters is what these people are actually going to do if they're put into that position of power. But this stuff does matter for voters, and it does matter for the media cycles. I mean, if you have those strong moments that the media can play over and over again, that gets people onto your side. And she didn't, when given the opportunity, she didn't really take it. And she was given many opportunities. I mean, I don't have the speaking times in front of me, but Bernie Sanders was like way down the list again. I mean, barely asked a question. Elizabeth Warren, you know, up top there with Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg, and who else? Like Amy Klobuchar was above Bernie.
I have it in front of me because I was tracking it throughout the debate.
I saw you tweeting about it.
It is ridiculous. Listen, 22, almost 23 minutes for Warren. I totally get that. Not complaining. She's the front runner. She needed time to, obviously they're going to ask her a lot of questions, and also she's going to need the time to hit back, you know, respond to all the people going at her. No problem with the 22, 23 minutes Warren got. Makes sense. Biden's next, second, with about 17 minutes. Again, another guy who's up there in the polls. Totally get it. So you assume 22 minutes for Warren, 17 minutes for Biden. Bernie maybe would be third with, you know, maybe 14, 15 minutes. No. Klobuchar, Amy Klobuchar, and Beto O'Rourke both got more time than Bernie Sanders, with Buttigieg getting around the same time as Sanders. It is a joke.
That's unbelievable.
And a lot of that time actually, Bernie just made, because I was tracking it throughout, a lot of that time actually was made up towards the end of the debate, because I tracked it at an hour and a half in and then 2.5 hours in. And at that point, Bernie Sanders had only spoken more than Yang, Castro, Gabbard, and Steyer, basically the bottom of the barrel candidates. So
yeah,
it is ridiculous that Booker, Harris, Buttigieg, O'Rourke, Klobuchar, any of these people had more speaking time than Bernie. With that said, I have seen pundits who, you know, they like to say they're impartial and, you know, have no skin in the game and no favorite, and they just tell it straight down the line. I think that's always bullshit, but okay. But I've seen those people tonight. These aren't the ones that go on cable news. These are the smart people who do the reporting for, like, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and such, and you know, write the smart op-ed columns there. But I've seen those folks say, I think Bernie was one of the best tonight, if not the best. Bowie from the Times said he thought Bernie came out looking the best tonight. So, I mean,
well, there you go.
Maybe you don't need all the time in the world, but I mean, unless you have this situation, I think, where the other people aren't doing so great and you just happen to be on your A game for the short amount of time you got, I do think time matters. It just so happened it worked in his favor tonight.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with these debates is it can be hard to really judge how people did, because we know more than most people. Like we know that Bernie has the facts on his side. We know that Buttigieg is completely full of crap. We know that most of the candidates on stage are completely full of crap and are just there for their egos. So to watch these candidates go at each other, I mean, all these debates, I can say for myself, Bernie won them because he is actually speaking to reality, speaking to the facts, speaking for the people. And he does it every time he has an opportunity to speak. But if you have pundits actually acknowledging that he came off the strongest tonight, I think that does say a lot. And I think his closing, Bernie's closing, was also fantastic. So you have when you leave people with that kind of impression, and also the way he starts. So the debate, I think the first maybe half hour or hour, I think Bernie, that's when he had the most time to speak. And then I feel like the middle, you know, hour and a half, he was barely even touched on at all. I mean, they completely skipped him on some major topics. And then, yeah, as you said, like the end of the debate, then he got some more time. So as long as you start well and you end well and you have, and that's where your time is, I think that does benefit you. I'm happy the way the whole healthcare question came up in terms of his health. I mean, I knew that was going to come. They were obviously going to bring up his heart and all that. But it kind of started with a joke. Like him and Aaron Burnett had like a moment where he'd laughed about, yeah, my health is fine. Let me talk about whatever. And then the crowd laughed. So it kind of softened up the room, and then he was able to really get it out. And then he thanked everybody on stage for sending him their well wishes and everything. And I feel like that was a real genuine moment. And
right.
It's rare to see politicians have actual genuine moments because of how fake so many of them are. So I think that added to the fact that Bernie had a strong night. I mean, that moment, that genuine moment on top of all his real, you know, solid policy answers, really helped lift him to what I think is the winner of this debate.
Right. No, they absolutely skipped him on a number of important policy issues. Gun control, I think extremism was another one. Drug addiction, the opioid crisis. I mean,
abortion, I think, as well, he was skipped.
Right. They completely didn't even come to him. Then they go. The next time you hear from him is, so, candidate's health is in question.
Yes. Yeah.
It was, I'm like,
yeah.
Are you
after
kidding?
After ignoring him for like half an hour, so they go to his health. It's just, yeah, it was just blatant. Like, it's one thing if it happens in one debate, but you see it in every debate where he's sidelined or it's either the way they frame questions or it's him barely being asked questions. And usually it's both. It's the framing is always from a right wing or a corporate perspective in terms of framing the questions on these policy questions. And if they can go after Bernie on something like his health or his age, they're going to take that opportunity. And they do it every time. But despite the fact that he was sidelined most of the debate, and they touched on his health and his heart and all that, he still came out strong, as he does every time. He comes out with solid answers. I mean, there was a moment where I feel like he could have gone, that moment when he went after Joe Biden, I feel like he could have gone even harder. So he mentioned how, I should pull it up because I made notes on it, because the way he phrased it was great. He mentioned how, how you got the Iraq war done. Because Joe Biden was talking about how all the things he got done.
Right.
And he's like, you know what, Joe, you also got the Iraq war done.
Right.
You also got these trade deals, these disastrous trade deals that, you know, destroyed Ohio, which the state they're in. You also got those done. So I love that he brought that up. I feel like he could have kept going and really, you know, really hit him hard. I thought that was a good moment. And I think that showed a lot of people, hey, yeah, Joe Biden has some, you know, horrible skeletons in his closet that aren't really discussed all that often. And you have these two candidates. It's rare to have two politicians on stage with such a long history going back into like the 70s. Right. And you can really compare them. And it's one thing for Biden to be up there and say, well, you know, I was just doing what everyone else was doing back then. But if you have Bernie up there, he can't say that because Bernie is the direct contrast to who Biden is. And they've been doing this the same amount of time. So for every crappy vote that Biden has, Bernie has a good vote. And you can go back in time and Biden can't use that excuse and just say, well, I mean, that was the Democratic Party. Because you have Bernie there who was on the correct side of history from the beginning. So being able to make that comparison, showing how these two candidates have been here forever and one has been on the correct side of history and one has consistently done the wrong thing while in the position of power as he was vice president. Making that contrast, I think, really is what will convince people to really support Bernie.
Right. I think it was the first time I've ever seen it framed that way on a debate stage, and I was so happy it was framed that way because it's something that I constantly bring up when one of these moderate Democrats or centrists come out there and go, yeah, these progressives talk a big game or whatever, but I want to get things done. And I'm always the thing I always say is, listen, if the things you get done suck, then I'd honestly rather not get anything done. I'd rather not make things worse. Let's just fight to keep it as is if you want to make things not like even worse, you know? So to see him basically say, not that exact framing, but sort of like it, it was a breath of fresh air. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, not to jump this way, but it made me think of this. You know, I really like when Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren tag team on Medicare for All. I think it's given great moments for every debate where the two of them have been together defending Medicare for All from literally everybody else. But the thing that irked me this time more than others, because she was the front runner, so they all came at her for it, was that she just wouldn't come out and say clearly what Bernie Sanders says in terms of how are you going to pay for it when they ask, you know, how are they going to pay for it? And Bernie clearly says, you know, taxes will go up for everybody, a lot more for the very wealthy than everybody else, but it'll be offset by all the money you save from there being no more premiums and cheaper prescriptions. And at the end of the day, you will actually end up with more money in your pocket. He frames it perfectly because that's that. I mean, people could understand that. She just refuses to say that. She just refuses to say that. Because she doesn't want to say taxes will go up on the middle class.
Yeah.
And it's stupid to me because her thing is that she doesn't want to give the Republicans a talking point, a clip or whatever. Are they not attacking Medicare for All already? Like, they don't need your clip. Let me just finish this thought. What you're doing here, actually, you were just extending that whole segment that allowed the other 10 candidates who aren't you and Bernie to shit all over Medicare for All. Just be forward with it like Bernie was, and they would have had nothing to say because their whole game, their rug would have been pulled out from under them.
Yeah. This is the poll tested side of Elizabeth Warren, where because she's been conditioned, and I think you could say, you know, rightfully, wrongfully, that talking about raising taxes scares people. So she doesn't want to say taxes at all. That she doesn't. So she focuses on cost, which I understand. Like, I understand her doing that if she's the only one talking about it. But if you are engaged in a question, if someone asks you, are taxes going to go up, and you just avoid the question, it sounds like you're hiding something. Just if you're directly asked the question, are you going to raise taxes? Just say, yes, I'm going to raise taxes on the wealthiest people. The middle class will not be paying, you know, any premiums, any co-pays, any deductibles, whatever, paying nothing out of pocket, and their taxes will go up, but they will save because they'll be paying less of the taxes than they will to a private insurance company. That's all she has to say. But because she is, like, I don't know if it's her campaign or whatever the hell it is, they have clearly told her, do not tell people you were going to raise your taxes. And this is the old style of politics. This is like being afraid to tell people reality. No, just be honest with people. People appreciate reality. I mean, this is why you see polling. I saw a recent Fox News poll. Bernie Sanders, up top, the most honest and trustworthy candidate. He beats Elizabeth Warren by, I believe, 9 points. Beats Biden by 11 points, beats Trump by 24 points. Bernie Sanders, the most honest and trustworthy in a Fox News poll, because people know he has no BS. He just tells you the truth. And this is also why he is the strongest candidate to go up against Donald Trump or any Republican candidate, because he's someone that actually can bring out non-voters, because he comes off as not a typical politician. He comes off, I mean, he's also an independent senator. That also helps him. The fact that he's not attached to either party, and both parties are historically unpopular. If you have Bernie Sanders on the ticket, you have somebody who has a history of fighting for you. You can go back and watch his old videos from the 80s, from the 90s. He has a history of fighting for you. He has a grassroots movement supporting him. He takes no big dollar or no big donor money, no corporate money, and he has no BS. He tells you honestly what's going to happen. Maybe you agree with all this stuff, maybe you don't, but at least you know who he is, where he's coming from, what he's going to fight for. And people appreciate that. Elizabeth Warren falls into this typical politician trap where she tries to go back to her messaging. And if you don't directly answer questions, it just turns people off. And look, I support Bernie, but if you're a Warren supporter, you should want her to be honest. You should want her to just tell people what she supports in terms of even in terms of like Medicare for All, because I'm not even clear if she really supports
right.
or if she's really going to fight for Medicare for All. I mean, the plan at her site apparently isn't really full Medicare for All. I think it doesn't cover mental care or something like that. It's the way she has different answers for different people at different times. So on a debate stage, she'll say she supports Medicare for All. But then you talk to her surrogates or you question her afterwards, you press her on it. She says, well, not all the details are there. There's different ways to get there. Medicare for All is the gold standard. When she says Medicare for All is the gold standard, that makes me think she's not really going to fight for it. It's more of like, oh, long term, down the line, eventually Medicare for All. So, yeah, she may have some great proposals, some great positions, but I don't know what she will fight for and what she won't, because she's not always clear about it.
Real quick on that poll that you mentioned that shows that Bernie Sanders is the most trusted, I'm pretty sure if you extrapolate the data and compare the percentage that think he's the most trusted and then the percentage who said they would vote for him as their number one candidate, it's pretty clear that there are people out there who are openly saying, I'm not going to vote for the person I trust most.
Yeah, no, that's – yeah, which it's crazy how people twist themselves into knots. And I think a big part of that too is just how mass media brainwashes people. I mean, because when they see Bernie on TV, they see him being honest and trustworthy. But at the same time, then it goes back to, you know, the pundit on television talking about, oh, crazy Bernie Sanders. So he'll never win. There's no way he can defeat Trump. So then people just think, oh, I guess my favorite guy can't win. Okay, who else? Like, people don't think for themselves, or like they don't go online and listen to some other information and don't realize that people on television, most of them are millionaires and are not, they don't have your best interest in mind.
Right.
So they have no desire, there's no reason for them to support a candidate or be honest about a candidate that is going to challenge their own wealth and their own power in this current system. So yeah, it's just, there's a lot going on in terms of brainwashing and all that, but I'm not sure where I'm going here, but
no,
Bernie.
No, but I think, you know, the point of the matter is I think people tend to, not all people, but there is a contingent of people out there who think they should support the person who's most likely to win in the primary.
Yeah,
exactly. or they'll just sit the primary out and then vote for whoever wins. But that's you're missing the point. The point is the primary is you vote in the primary because you have a say in who that person will be. You can pick who you want the nominee to be.
That's where the fight happens.
Right. Pick who you want, who you think will best represent you and what you'd like to see represent the Democratic Party, become the president of the United States, and vote for that person. And now let me bring up the Medicare, back to the Medicare for All thing with Warren. Now here's the thing. There's two issues here with Warren, with Medicare for All. She says she supports Bernie's Medicare for All plan, which is great if that's the case. Then she doesn't need to have her own plan on her website. I get it. She has a plan for everything, but the one plan where she's in complete agreement with Bernie Sanders, why would she formulate her own plan? Just support Bernie's plan. That's what she said she's been doing. That's why she doesn't have her own Medicare for All plan. Cool. I'm fine with that. But then she also says that the plan as is only a framework. If that's the case, if it's just a framework, if it's not everything you think it should be, then you don't have a Medicare for All plan. You don't have a healthcare plan. And the candidate who says, I have a plan for that, doesn't have a plan for the most pressing issue to the majority of people in this country. And I think that's a big problem then. So it's either you don't need the plan because you support Bernie's plan, or Medicare for All as is just a framework. It's not everything you believe in, and you don't have a plan. Pick one, because that's where we're at right now, you know?
Yeah, that's why, like, this is why I don't think she'll fight for it, because she would be clear about this if she knew where she stood on this issue. I mean, I think this should be the biggest issue. I mean, I talk about this on my channel because I'm Canadian. I have health care. We have single payer system. Anybody else that isn't supporting that is lying to you. Pete Buttigieg, his whole spiel about his Medicare choice Complete BS. Just a total lie. I hate that guy so much. He's such a fraud. I can't stand Pete Buttigieg. I used to hate Beto more. Now I hate Buttigieg more. He's just a total fraud. And anybody that is not supporting.
At least Beto stands up for certain issues. Pete Buttigieg is just, I mean, like you, Beto, you know, jumped into the race and I was like, oh, this guy's going to be the worst. And then Pete Buttigieg started rising in the polls and I was like, I'm sorry, Beto. You're not my guy, but I'm sorry for how I've maligned you. You definitely are cool on certain things. You're not my candidate, but there's some areas of agreement. With Pete Buttigieg, there's just nothing. This guy's got no, I don't even know why he's running as a Democrat. There is nothing.
He's being given lots of money. I mean, his rise and what he's been saying in the press, it coincides with the corporate money he's getting. Because when he was first on MSNBC, I think I maybe even covered it, he seemed like an all right guy. Like, he sounded like he was actually going to be like progressive. I think he talked about how he was inspired by Bernie Sanders. I'm pretty sure that came up somewhere. And then he wrote a
college essay on who inspires him the most, and it was Bernie Sanders. Which, looking back now, I'm like, where did this guy
go? Who is this? Yeah, exactly. but you see, because the more and more money he got from DC insiders, the more billionaire donors he got. I mean, this is data from over the summer, but he had 23 billionaire donors over the summer, the most out of anybody in the race. I'm not sure where he sits at now, but I'm sure he has more. And that's all his money. I mean, he keeps raising a lot of money, and it's mostly from these big donors. I mean, that's who he represents. And the more money that they give him, the more what he's been saying changes. So, like, you see this guy just being completely molded and propped up by the corporate establishment. And also, if you look at individual donors, that New York Times map, if you zoom in to D.C., it's Pete Buttigieg. Right. Pete Buttigieg has all his support right in Washington, D.C. Everybody around is like Bernie, and there's some Warren there, some Biden, but it's Buttigieg right in D.C. because that's who supports him.
Right.
And this is a guy who's just completely phony. And the only reason he's going to stay in this race much longer, and potentially even, you know, well into next year, is because he has that money behind him, that big dollar money behind him, and that's it. He's just an empty shell for these big donors.
Right. A previous guest on this show, I can't remember who, but a previous guest on this show brought up how he practically tried to play the same role in the DNC chair fight right after the 2016 election, if you remember.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Perez and Ellison were basically going head-to-head. You know, you had the person that the moderates wanted, Ellison, and you had the person the progressives Perez, and the person that the progressive wanted, Ellison, and Pete Buttigieg was running and trying and sort of splitting that vote, and he sort of dropped out, and all of his few supporters at the last moment then jumped to Perez, giving him the win. He was like basically in there just to collect people to make sure Perez was going to have that final number to put him over the edge.
Yeah, it makes me wonder who's in this guy's ear. Like, who's pushing him from, like, race to race to race? Like first he was in, like, the DNC chair race, and now he's in the presidential. Like, he's a mayor. Like, he's just a young mayor. Like, why do we know who this guy is? Like, it's so weird that, like, it makes you think there's like, clearly big donors behind him, but even before that, like, there's some force behind him pushing him to do these things when he's just a mayor of a random city in the country. Like, why Pete Buttigieg?
Other than those wealthy donors, from what I can gather, Pete Buttigieg's main base are people over the age of 55, 60 who are convinced that it's time for the next generation to take over. Yeah. And so we need a young person, and Pete Buttigieg is the youngest. But this is what always blows my mind. It's important that the Democratic Party lets the young people take over. So they're picking one young person to represent them. Yet the young base of the party, the actual youth voters in the party, are all saying, hey, we want Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
So they want the party to be handed over to the youth. And when I say the youth, I mean the one youth, not the youth in general, who are the majority of people who support Bernie. It's incredible to watch that thinking. And I swear to God, I've seen I've seen some of them almost, you know, have their come to Jesus moment. I saw a poll from a Buttigieg supporter on Twitter, and this is just, you know, one person. It's just, this is just a funny little thing. This isn't me trying to say this is some, this is something that speaks to a larger base. It's just a funny observation. There was a Buttigieg supporter who was frustrated as to why Buttigieg and Beto and those types weren't rising, and they put a poll together. Hey, young people, who do you support? Is it Biden? Is it Warren? Is it Amy Klobuchar? Is it every? They literally put everyone they could on the poll except for Bernie Sanders. And the entire replies were all, hey, I think you forgot somebody. It's like they just refuse to come to, like, they refuse to admit it. They get so close, but they refuse to admit that people under the age, really people under the age of 45, but even more so people under the age of 35, like Bernie Sanders a lot.
Yeah, I said this on my live stream earlier, that my debate preview. I said that Pete Buttigieg is who boomers think young people would vote for. Like,
it's exactly it.
That's where his support comes from. Apart from the big donors, obviously. But yeah, it's boomers that think, hey, this is a young guy. He's gay. And he's in the military. I mean, this is a veteran. Like, this he's got it all. Right. Like, why don't you support this guy? Like, for them, it's all identity. They don't look past. Like, hey, what is he about? What does he support? Is he going to cancel student debt? Is he for Medicare for all? Like, it doesn't clue into these people that maybe young people care about actual policy, how the president's going to impact their lives because their lives have been destroyed over the past 30 years. Like, it's amazing to me how out of touch these people are. And I see it all the time. I see it constantly. And the only thing I could attribute it to is that they watch CNN, they watch MSNBC, and they're just mesmerized. And that's it. They can't think outside that bubble. And even like talk shows like The View, like there's always a certain framework that all these political discussions operate within. And Bernie Sanders is rarely ever makes it into these discussions. It's like, oh, Warren, Biden, Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, maybe Beto, and like, they forget about Bernie as the candidate with the most individual donors, the most volunteers, the most individual donations, the most support from the young people. I mean, what more do you need? And now maybe with this endorsement from the squad, maybe they're going to wake up to it. Maybe some of them will finally clue in and think, oh, AOC supports Bernie. Oh, now I get it. That's my hope, but I probably not.
Yeah, I don't think so. Listen, I think it's and you brought up identity, and I think it's hilarious that, and I have no problem with identity politics. I think it's super important. What I have a problem with is the bad faith weaponization of identity politics, and that's what we saw in 2016. And the funny thing is, so many people join the political process with Donald Trump becoming president that the farthest they go back is 2016. And to them, this idea that a Democratic primary is not the super well-known Democrat who already has established relationships with pretty much every single community and minority group and special, you know, literally everyone they possibly could. Versus the outsider, they can't understand that that's no longer the case. And it's not even, and they can't understand it's no longer 1v1 and 1v1. So all that weaponization of identity politics, they've been trying it this time around against Bernie, and it doesn't stick because never before has it been so blatantly false and a lie. Because listen, if your thing is vote like a black woman, you can't be picking Kamala and Elizabeth Warren, which is what most of those weaponization of ID politics people prefer, those two candidates. You actually are forced to pick Biden because that's the candidate right now who has got the most support from black people in this country.
Yeah.
If you think that we should support the candidate who has most support from the Latino community, the community that's most being affected by Donald Trump's racist immigration policies, got news for you. It's not Elizabeth Warren. It's not Joe Biden. It's not Kamala Harris. It's not Pete Buttigieg. That candidate is Bernie Sanders. They can't they can't wrap their head around it. When it comes to the support of women, it's pretty much evenly split throughout with, I believe, Bernie having more women supporters than male supporters. Elizabeth Warren's got more white supporters than Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders has more support from people making less than 50K than any other candidate. All the little identity politics, race, gender, even when they want to use class to try to pull up how, oh, look, they're getting money from people who are making above 50K or whatever, the only time they care about class. Even when they do that, it no longer works in their favor in trying to attack Bernie Sanders because it just doesn't work. Their candidates are polling good with the white people that we were told in the previous election don't matter.
it's amazing. And it, look, it doesn't stop him from trying. I mean, you've seen the, you know, Bernie makes my skin crawl. I'm not even sure why, but I see him as not a pro-woman candidate. Like, that kind of crap. Like, they still try to pull that stuff on him. But, yeah, as you say, you look at the data shows you that Bernie has the most diverse support base, the most working-class support base. Elizabeth Warren, I believe, has the most white support base.
One of the wealthiest, if you don't count like the big, from regular, which is cool, no problem, but still the point is that, people given under 50K have, they got skin in the game. They're actually putting the money in hoping that their lives get better. You know, if you're making over like 100K and you're throwing your favorite candidate $200 or something, you most likely are just doing it, for reasons because you like that candidate personally,
And identity politics do matter. I think representation does matter. I think it does matter to eventually at some point have a woman in the White House. I think these things do matter. They do have a cultural impact. They do have an impact on society. They do have a positive impact. Bernie Sanders is just far and away the only candidate in this race speaking to the issues that he is speaking to, and in a way that he will actually fight for them. I mean, he is a transformational, once-in-a-lifetime candidate. If there was a 50-year-old female black lesbian candidate, then that was like Bernie Sanders exactly, then totally I would support her. But like that doesn't exist. It's Bernie Sanders right now. So it's weird to get into these identity fights with people that you can tell most of them don't even really care about policy or don't know or it doesn't affect their lives. They probably, they make good money. They probably have great health care. A lot of this stuff for them is just a game. Whereas for people that support a candidate like Bernie Sanders, for them, it's life or death a lot of the time. For them, this is like their last shot. They need relief from student debt. They need health care. There are so many ways that Bernie can improve and enrich their lives. And they see that. They see that in the candidate that they have seen already fight for them. They've seen a history of this person fighting for them, and they know that if Bernie gets into office, it's not only about just him, but as he talks about, it's about activating a movement of people to put pressure on politicians in every state to change the system to actually support bills like Medicare for All. Bernie Sanders has said that if Joe Manchin in West Virginia doesn't support Medicare for All, he will go to West Virginia, activate their base. He will hold rallies there. He will get people in the state to put pressure on Joe Manchin to support Medicare for All. And you know Bernie will do that. You know if given the power, he's never been given that kind of power, but if given that power, you know he will be on the side of people. So this is something that other politicians and corporations and the wealthy, they're afraid of because they know he will actually fight. So you've seen them now be a little softer on Elizabeth Warren, a little more open to her, because I think they know they can massage her a little bit. I think they know she won't really fight the way that Bernie will fight. Bernie will get in there and he will, wreck your shit. I mean, he will destroy you if given the chance. So we're going to have to see if he's given that chance. But I think that really is the clear distinction, is that a lot of people that support him actually need the help.
Right. Right, that's exactly it. And, usually for these post-debate shows, I go through all the candidates and give a little short something. But honestly, I mean, if you weren't Bernie, Warren, Biden, I mean, let's just do it really quick. Tom Steyer completely had his first time on the stage was at the October debate says enough. And the fact that he didn't take that opportunity to somehow make himself memorable and put himself out there, I can't imagine this. And this guy's put so much money into this. It is unbelievable that this guy is on the stage. And the only way he's continuing to get on the stage is if he's by throwing more money at it. So that's all I got to say about him.
Yeah, Steyer essentially, he bought his way into the race, didn't he? He had the email list from his anti-Trump stuff. He used that email list to then fundraise for his campaign to get enough money to reach the threshold to make the debates. This guy bought his, this billionaire bought his way into the debates sort of through a loophole almost. So, yeah, he didn't have any moments that really stood out. I can't imagine he's going to be in the conversation at all.
Right. Klobuchar, I mean, we already talked about how God knows why they decided, CNN and New York Times decided we had to keep going to her. She got more time than she deserved. She got more time than Beto and Buttigieg. And as low as they are, they're polling higher than her. I mean, ridiculous. They gave her that much time. Cory Booker and Julian Castro were pretty, for people who've had strong debate showings, I thought this was completely not memorable at all for them. They added nothing. Although I will say one Booker moment that struck me was when he said, "We have to stop tearing each other down like we did in 2016, which to me was super underhanded way of saying, while simultaneously saying we should all not tear each other, all the people up here shouldn't tear each other down. He underhandedly also goes at the same time, but we shouldn't do what Bernie did in 2016 to Hillary, which is false. That's just a bullshit attack line to begin with. So that pissed me off. But
I wonder what his girlfriend thinks about that. Rosario Dawson, who supported Bernie Sanders in 2016.
Right.
Are they going to talk about that later? I mean, that's it. I guess one moment from Booker that I wrote down for, I guess it was memorable for me. I don't know why. Maybe he already talked about this, but he challenged somebody on supporting the minimum wage. I think it was Yang. Yeah, because Yang was talking about his UBI, and then Cory Booker is, how about you support the minimum, like raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour? So I thought that was a moment, because Yang doesn't support raising the minimum wage. So I thought that was at least a moment against Yang. But apart from that, Booker didn't really stand out too much to me.
Who else was he? I don't even remember who was on the stage. Kamala Harris. The media has officially declared that she's no longer a top-tier candidate, because she was treated like given less time than Klobuchar. I mean,
yeah, it's actually amazing. That's crazy,
right? And the fact that she decided to take her time to talk about banning Trump from Twitter is just what a waste of time. I mean,
yeah, if that was like her big moment,
right? I mean, if
going after Warren about that,
if that's your position, fine. I totally get it. I could even agree with it. But that's not a policy. We're talking about one single social media company's terms of service. That's just that's ridiculous. That's not even like discussing, just talking about how Facebook is a monopoly is legit policy discussion. Discussing how Twitter deals with their website terms of service with one person's account, that's just a waste of national stage time.
Yeah, it's almost like big tech identity politics or something. It's just like, it's just completely empty. It's just it's weird how her campaign decided, you know what, or maybe she just decided in that moment, this is my big moment. I'm going to go after Elizabeth Warren for not wanting to ban Trump from Twitter. Like, is that what you're going to leave this race with? Gotta give Tulsi Gabbard some credit in that second debate for just completely wrecking her. And since that debate, Harris has not been able to recover. So that's one good reason. I mean, Gabbard started off a little stronger in this race than she now appears after some of her turns. Maybe we'll get to that now. But yeah, Kamala Harris, just I think she'll be forgot about at this point.
Right. Tulsi, she was forgettable too. She tried to go for her, like she had the her big moment with Kamala Harris a couple debates ago. She tried to go for the same thing with Warren, and CNN shot that down real quick and cut to commercial. Actually, that was bizarre.
I think she tried a couple times, and I'd say Gabbard maybe had the most awkward moments because of that. Like there was at least twice where she tried to go after Warren, but she didn't even really say anything. She's like, Warren, how have you shown leadership?
Right. Like, she tries to pose a question towards them. And that's actually why she gets shut down, because the rules of debate say you can't ask a question to the other candidates.
Yeah. So, why not just bring up, like, if you don't, maybe you don't like how Warren voted to raise the military spending or something, even though I think Gabbard herself also voted for that. So right. maybe not be able to go after her on that. But, like, I don't know, pick a policy, pick something. But it's just, she just posed a question. I don't know how you're going to get Warren with that.
Yeah. Tulsi ain't progressive. The people who are supporting Tulsi over Bernie are. Are I call them the it's the Seth Rich Truther contingent of the the left. Yeah. She has that
tall cells.
Right. Who's left? Oh, Buttigieg and Beto. Now, I don't really, you know, we already talked about them a bit. But to me, this is why these one night multi, you know, 10 to 12 person debates don't work. I know people are thrilled to see, oh, only one night of the Democratic debates. But no, the one night Democratic debates with the 10 to 12 top tier candidates, in my opinion, have been the worst, because here's the example you saw tonight. You know, in the earlier debates, the ones that took two nights, you split it up between the top tier, a few top tier, a few bottom tier, put them together, bunch on the first night, bunch on the second night. And what you end up happening is one top tier candidate going at it with one bottom tier candidate. And this is what happens here. You're giving the top tier candidate time, which they deserve because they're the top tier candidate, and you're giving the bottom tier candidate a chance to pull themselves up in the polls, because, man, if they get one over on a top tier candidate, that'll give them a boost. What you have tonight, and the last one, is you have large chunks of time where the sixth place candidate in the polls is going at it with the ninth place candidate in the polls for like 20 minutes. And it's like, why are we even wasting time on this? Neither of them have anything to win from it. What are they going to get? Like a 0.5 percentage point from this? And then on top of that, you're not giving time to the top tier candidates. Just a waste of time. So that's why I actually hate these like packed stages that only take one night. I much prefer the split nights if we're going to have this many people on stage.
Yeah, I think at one point at the beginning of the debate, CNN said, we have a record number of people on this stage, 12 candidates. I feel like when it's October, we shouldn't hear that line. We shouldn't hear record number of candidates on stage just a few months before Iowa. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know what the DNC or whoever is doing with these rules, but I feel like there should have been less than 12 people on that stage at this point in the race. It's just, we're wasting our time. There's clearly three top candidates. If you want to be super fair, okay, fine. Add in, I don't know,
Buttigieg and Kamala, right?
Kamala. And then there's the top five. Like, why are we playing games here? Why and I guess we're playing games because they really don't want to put, I don't know. Actually, I really don't know. I mean, I guess the idea is, maybe if you whittle it down to, you know, the top five, you're really going to have to get into some real policy differences and some real discussions about how to actually help people's lives. And it's going to come down to Bernie and Warren and what they have to offer. And everybody else is just going to have, you know, empty rhetoric, essentially, and or the same ideas that have been just given over and over again every cycle. So that's the only, I mean, by having 12 candidates up there, I guess it benefits the corporate class in terms of limiting the time that Bernie and Warren have to speak. But yeah, there's just no benefit to having that many people on stage. It's absurd.
Right. And the one person we haven't discussed yet, and I don't want his gang to get disappointed and think we're...
Almost forgot.
Andrew Yang. And listen, I gotta say, usually with the amount of time this guy gets, I think he brings up some good points. But then you see tonight where I think he was probably given more time than ever before. And when this is a situation where he's given more time and, you know, you get to see who he really is. I think he is completely out of his league here. I think he means well. I don't think he's some sort of a wolf in sheep's clothing like some people think. I think he's a guy who means well. I do think that when he does drop out, a large contingent of his base will actually, funny enough, end up supporting Bernie because they like the whole outsider aspect. That's what sort of drives them to Yang. I also think that's going to happen with Tulsi. And although she doesn't have as much support, Marianne Williamson, Bernie's going to gain from all three of them easily when they drop out. But, you know, Andrew Yang is so obsessed with this automation thing that he's completely, and listen, automation is something to keep in mind, but he really does think it's the driver. The idea that this technology that's just being tested in certain states and isn't even like ready for mass use yet is the driver of this stuff. I mean, he just completely ignores the actual issues. And I think the a UBI is a good idea if we're talking about just not his specific one, but a universal basic income. I think eventually, mm-hmm. with the way things will go, I think it'll be necessary, you know, if we want everyone to not live in poverty. Mm-hmm. But his UBI, the way he has it, it's just a bad plan. It takes away from people who are on the social safety net, and it does not take anything from the wealthy people who will also receive that extra $1,000 a month. It does nothing to keep your landlord from going, oh shit, you got an extra $1,000 a month? I'm raising the rent $1,000. It's just connected to nothing. And his climate change plan, this was at a previous debate. We didn't talk climate change in this debate, which is ridiculous.
But yeah.
At a debate where it did come up, his climate change plan was give everyone $1,000 a month and they'll move to higher ground. You think people are going to, with $12,000 a year, leave their home behind and get a new and find a new home? That's just ridiculous. Like, this guy means well. Yeah. I really do think so. I don't think he's a bad guy, but he's completely divorced from reality and just doesn't understand the reality, like what's really going on. And I think he's got, I don't know what the vision is called, weird techno-libertarian vision. I can't, I just don't get it.
Yeah, pretty much. I pretty much agree with you 100% on everything there. I think Yang is a genuine guy. I don't think he has any malicious intent. I don't think he's even ego-driven. I think he's an honest guy that has a message and believes in what he's talking about, but he's clearly out of his league here. And UBI seems to be his answer for most things. And it's just, it's not, as you say, it's UBI, I think, will be necessary at some point. But the way he's implementing it, it's not really going to change anything. Like, you need to actually, like, I want to hear more in terms of what Andrew Yang, just in terms of like healthcare, does he support Medicare for all? I'm not even sure what his healthcare plan is.
I have no idea. I
feel like he's never really pressed on other issues because he just tends to go back to, oh, the UBI has got to solve that one too. Like, it's just, it's a plan, or UBI is an idea that can absolutely be implemented properly to help people. But his is definitely libertarian in the way he wants to implement it. And he's just not somebody that, I mean, even if he had some of the right proposals in some other areas like healthcare, I don't see this guy fighting. He doesn't understand the system. You have to, like, there's definitely something to being an outsider, but you need to be an outsider that understands how to be a politician. Like, you need to be an outsider that understands how to work within the system, within the walls of the system. That's Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is an outsider that knows how to work the system, knows how to use public pressure to get things done. Andrew Yang, this is a guy who would just 100% collapse on the first day. He would just, well, you take the reins, you do it. It would be like Donald Trump, but with good intent. Like, that's kind of what the difference I see here is. Andrew Yang would have good intent, but essentially he really would not be in control and wouldn't really know what the hell he's doing.
Right, right. A great moment from Warren at this debate, one of her good moments at this debate, was when Yang is going on about automation and how we need to, you know, set ourselves up for the future where corporations suddenly don't care about their workers because they've automated everything. And Elizabeth Warren goes, I mean, I agree that automation will be an issue in the future, but this is, corporations are getting rid of workers now. They didn't wait for automation. Yeah. Corporations are exporting jobs. They're not looking out for workers now. Automation had nothing to do with what's going on. It's a bizarre thing to put your whole campaign on now. And I mean, even from what I've seen from studies and experts in this situation, a lot of people are saying automation is going to end up actually, yeah, there'll be jobs lost in certain sectors, but then there'll actually be a whole lot more jobs because of the jobs that come from automated technologies that need to be filled. These workers will either A, already be out of the workforce by then because they'll be old enough that they're no longer working, or B, they'll be young enough to just transition over to one of these other industries. It's just like not something that's going to completely, you know, shake everything up like Andrew Yang thinks it will.
Yeah, I just, he's a guy where I don't, like, I get that he's well-intentioned. I get that, you know, he has some ideas that maybe haven't been discussed enough before, like UBI, or pretty much just UBI. But he's somebody where I really don't care to hear much more from. I mean, I've heard enough. The first debate, right. I agree, he was completely sidelined. He was not asked enough questions. I mean, he had, like, what, 2 minutes of time in that first debate.
Right.
But now we've seen he has a lot of time now. He's had enough time. And I'm not interested. I get people. I really do think most of the people that are attracted to him is because he's an outsider. It's because he's not a politician.
Right.
And I think they just see that, and that's what attracts them. They don't really think much more past that. And look, I know people say he has a ton of plans on his website. You go to his website, he has so much detail. Someone told me that about his campaign finance reform, because I was tweeting about Bernie's campaign finance reform. So they sent me Andrew Yang's. I look at Andrew Yang's, it's like two lines. Like, right. It doesn't go after, you know, the corporate money in the DNC. It doesn't have specific steps. I'm not even sure if it talks about the Supreme Court decisions. Like, it just seems very void of any actual detail and in terms of what he'll actually do. Like, oftentimes what his plans will show is he'll have an analysis of the problem, but then not really have any concrete steps in terms of how he would change the problem. So it's odd. I guess I like the fact that there's maybe a different voice this time, like Marianne Williamson as well, something a little different in the race, at least at the beginning of it. But now that we're getting down to the nitty gritty, I think we're just wasting time. We're wasting time with Beto, with Klobuchar especially, even with Booker and Castro, who I don't hate. They have some good moments, but they're not in this race. And why are we wasting our time?
Right.
So. Unfortunately, though, this next debate, I mean, who's in it? I know Kamala Harris, I think, is already qualified, so she's still in this race.
I haven't even checked.
Yeah, so I think Kamala Harris makes the cutoff. I think there was four people. So I was watching a bit of the pre-CNN debate coverage, which is always fun. I think Bernie Sanders was mentioned once by accident.
They just ignore him all the time. It's so plainly, like, it's just not even, yeah. It's not even like... hidden the disdain they have for him. It's like,
yeah,
it's incredible. We go. This is who's in the debate so far. Oh boy, way more people than should be. Biden, Sanders, Warren, Harris, Buttigieg. That should be it, but it's not. Steyer, Yang, and Booker so far.
Steyer.
Still, yeah.
Oh, God.
He's literally bought his way into these polls, man. It's incredible. Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's. So it's less people. That's good. No more record-setting debates. At least so far. Maybe
O'Rourke. Rules. O'Rourke and Klobuchar still need to hit the hit. I'm not sure what the percentage is, but they only have met the criteria for just one poll, and they need four. So they might not even make it. That's a lot to get by the next couple weeks. They may not hit.
They got to drop. But so, yeah, Yang. Again, okay, fine. I can stomach Yang again. He's at least a genuine person. Kamala Harris, I guess I expected that. But I think Steyer really bugs me. Just the fact that this guy bought his way into the debates. He should not be here at all. He doesn't really have any unique ideas. During the debate, he tried to essentially agree with Bernie Sanders. I mean, how many times did we hear during this debate, I agree with Bernie? Okay, well then just support him. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, get out.
It happens all the time, right? It happens all the time.
Why are you wasting your time? Yeah. So he was one of those people as well. After Bernie went on his rant about taxing the wealthy, Steyer goes on there and is like, I agree with Bernie Sanders. We should also do that. I was like, okay, why are you here then? Like, just leave. You have no new ideas. He didn't really present anything, and he's going to be in this next debate. Oh God. Okay. I'm not sure what to even say anymore about that.
But. Yeah, it's So, that's the debate. And on the bright side, we got this exciting news about AOC, Ilhan Omar, and Rashid Tlaib. I mean, this is crazy. Crazy. And three, those, you know, it is. I mean, I brought it up earlier, but I don't know what the strategy behind the endorsement just out of the blue mid-October. I thought they would, if they did endorse, it would be closer to the primaries. But to me, it's got to be, they want to make sure that Sanders stays in the race, and no one thinks that the health issue is gonna affect his standing whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that's what it is. I think they were gonna plan to wait until the primary in each of their states, but they see how the polling looks right now. They know they're with Bernie on these issues. They know Bernie will fight. Bernie has worked with them on various things. And it's the perfect time. I think this is really the perfect time for them to endorse right after a debate, make this the conversation piece, and we'll see how it affects the polling.
Oh man, people are melting down on Twitter already. You'll love to see it about the three of them endorsing Bernie.
The endorsement, yeah.
You'll love to see it. Love to see it. Yeah, I don't know what people were thinking if they thought. I mean, there was always the possibility they didn't, but I mean, it was.
Marcos right. With the take, of course. You see his take?
No, I didn't.
Can we see how this registers, if at all? We've evolved past endorsements. No one cares.
I'm gonna look. Yeah, I'm gonna. The second I get off this, I'm like tweet searching his feed to see what he said about endorsements, because I guarantee that's not what he thinks. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, totally.
They're great. Gonna try. I've seen. You know what? You know, good old the horse whisperer.
Oh yeah.
He's already out there with ready for this take. This is gonna hurt the squad way more than it helps Bernie.
Oh my god!
Literally, the three most like popular Democrats right now. It's not gonna hurt them.
And by the way, they're popular because of the stuff they support and what they fight for. Like, these people are so disconnected if they think it's simply about identity. Obviously, that plays into it, but it's what they fight for. That these are our politicians, our congresspeople that are fighting for them. And in their races, I think all three of them were Justice Democrats. All three of them, or at least Tlaib and AOC were, I believe.
I think Omar might have been too, yeah.
Yeah, I think Omar, I'm not positive, I think Omar was too. But yeah, these are three politicians who, you know, they're backed by the people. That's where they get their support from, where they get their money from. So that's a huge piece of why people love these candidates, and also a huge piece of, or these politicians, and also a huge piece of why they love Bernie Sanders.
Right. David Dole of The Rational National on YouTube, thank you so much for joining me tonight. It's almost 1 a.m. I really appreciate you on the East Coast. I don't know where you are, but
yeah, East Coast.
Yeah, but it was I had fun. Hope you did too.
Oh, I had an awesome time. Thanks for having me on. And go to therationalnational.com, gets you to the YouTube page, and rationalnational.com/join gets you to the Patreon page.
I was just going to ask you to plug all that stuff. Perfect.
I'm right there.
We're on the same page. All right, man. Take care. Look forward to having you on again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
All right, folks. Patreon.com/Matt Binder to support this program and help it grow. That's patreon.com/Matt Binder. You could also give a one-off donation right now with a super chat in the YouTube live stream. Also subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Matt Binder. That's free to do. You could also go to doomedpod.com for the podcast, which will go up in a bit, to listen to on the web, and also to subscribe via iTunes, Google Play, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Leave a review on iTunes, leave a review wherever you can leave a review, patreon.com/Matt Binder once again. And these are the people who support this show via Patreon. The show, again, is not possible without them. Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew C, Andrew H, R.E.R., Ben, Benji, Bobby M, Brosnan, BZ, Champagne Kami, Chi, Christine H, Colin R, Dan, Dan K, Dan M, Dank Uger, Dave K, David Z, David P, Dragon Slayer, Eugene B, Froz K, FTW All Day, Future MD, Greg D, Grim, Ian Curtis J, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jeremy M, John G, John S, Jonathan B, Jonathan L, Joseph R, Joyce M, Justin M, Justin S, Katie S, Katz, Kaushal, Lisa D, Lisa H, Max W, User Me, Melissa M, Mitch V, Michael B, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Dinks, Nicole A, Namde Net, Null Style, Odef, Qster, Romina O, Ryan Left Is Best, Scott R, Sean H, Cena, Stephen S, Struggle Session, TM, Tamney G, Thaddeus A, Tina M, Tom G, Tom M, What Do You Mean Videos, Why That Thai Guy, Will P, Wootopia, Zachary P, Wootopian I should say, Zarin, and happy birthday I should say, to our newest Patreon subscriber, whose birthday it is today, obviously, Zoe G. Folks, once again, patreon.com/MattBinder, youtube.com/MattBinder. That's the show. Usually I'd go into the Patreon only part of the show. We do that literally every show, except when we do these post-debate shows, because like I said, it is literally, geez, what time is it even? I have no idea. It is late. So, instead of the patron show, where I go into your questions, comments, and other news of the day, I'm going to thank just the people who drop super chats and read only their comments. That's one of the bonuses you get when you drop a super chat. So, let me just pull up those super chats here. La-di-da-di-da. Here we go. Okay. All right, here we go. Qsterama with the $10 super chat. Thank you, Qsterama. Anything hosted by CNN and/or New York Times will be skewed against Bernie Sanders. Hashtag corporate media is shady AF. Hashtag Bernie 2020. I mean, we saw it at the last debate, and it wasn't CNN and New York Times, but I guess that's your point too with the corporate media, right? It is stunning. Just like they don't even try to hide it. How do you just ignore the guy who's either in second or third in pretty much every poll for huge policy questions you're going to throw to Beto, Buttigieg, and Klobuchar? Zero sense. Makes zero sense. Cameron McIntyre with the $5 super chat. Thank you, Cameron. Really appreciate it. Debate loser. The climate and anyone who wants human civilization to survive this century. No questions about climate policy, just scattered remarks. I got nothing else to add there, Cameron. That is a perfect point. We briefly mentioned that in our rundown of the debate. It is stunning that climate is just an afterthought. I think Bernie is the only one who really mentioned it. Maybe one other candidate did. I want to say it was someone out of left field too, like maybe a Steyer or someone early on mentioned it. Just a complete just ignoring a major issue like this. But yeah. Oh, let me get to this one here. This isn't a super chat, but it's someone on Twitter. Dude, you and David couldn't spend a couple of minutes on the Canadian election happening next week. Really? Color me disappointed. We did not, but that wasn't what the show is for. Maybe I'll have David on next week to talk about this. But I will say, I did have a guest on 2 episodes ago to talk about one specific person in the Canadian elections. Maxime Bernier, And you should check out that episode if you haven't already. It was Michael Buchert. And the episode is two episodes ago. It was called Canada's Far Right, Maxime Bernier and Dave Rubin Comes to Town. We do briefly touch upon the elections as a whole, and with a bigger focus on Bernier, obviously. So check that out for sure. All right, folks. Let me just make sure there's no super chats I'm missing. Otherwise, that's the show. Thanks for joining me this late hour. It will be really interesting to watch the news coverage on the big endorsements for Bernie. 3/4 of the squad. See you all next time on Doomed.